Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and two guests today, both from OTG and both from At The Hive, Evan Dial and Dylan Jackson. What's up, guys?
Hey, Nick. Pleasure to be here as always.
Yeah. I mean, thanks for having us. It's always fun to do an OTG podcast.
The person with the worst takes gets locked in a room with a hornet's nest.
That's our pun of the day. So we got that out of the way. Before we get started, as always, quick reminder, you want to check out any of the shows, previews, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio. But today we're previewing the Hornets for this upcoming season. Before we preview this upcoming season, we're going to look back at last year, 36-46. You know, Kemba was great. The Hornets dealt with a lot of injuries. Clifford was fired at the end of the season. What were your thoughts on the Hornets last year?
Well, it was more of the same. It was back-to-back 36-46 seasons for the Hornets. This year seemed even tougher than the year before. Again, a lot of losses in close games, injuries. Zeller, who's really important in the team, missed a lot of the season. That hurt. Batum had a bad year. A lot of regression from people they hoped would improve. MKG, Frank. I think Steve Clifford got fired, partly players for the first time started to tune him out. And then Dwight was just Dwight. So it was just kind of a slog of a year, if I had to put it in one word.
Yeah, last year was extremely disappointing, especially for me. I was expecting them to be like a fifth or sixth seed in the Eastern Conference. You know, they added Dwight Howard and got rid of Marco Bellinelli, and really, Malik Monk was supposed to have more of a role than he did last year. He only got like, I don't know, like 10 minutes per game. And even in that time, he was pretty explosive. Clifford just didn't give him much minutes. And Dwight Howard, he was disappointing to say the least. Locker room issues, granted they are overblown, they're still present. His turnovers, it stalled the offense sometimes. So to say the least, it's very disappointing last year.
I think every year since the year the Hornets signed Lance Stephenson, I've thought this team was going to make the playoffs. And then every year they finish in like the 9 through 11 range. And last year was no different, like you guys just mentioned. You know, they just really never got anything going. Nicholas Batum never looked right after coming back from that elbow injury. I think he tore his UCL or something like that. And he just never looked right. He never looked comfortable. And obviously, that contract is not aging very well, as he's also been having some Achilles issues. And as you guys mentioned, Dwight Howard, although he is a double-double machine still, there's just a lot of issues, you know, whether it's in the locker room, as Dylan mentioned, the turnovers. It was funny to watch him do like a one-man fast break on his own last season. Like, I know I saw that at one point. I think Kemba is always fun to watch, but the Hornets just continue to disappoint when it comes to being a playoff team.
What would you guys say was the most disappointing injury of last season? You know, you guys mentioned a couple guys being banged up. Which one do you think hurt the Hornets the most?
I think it's Zeller, even though Dwight became the starting center. Zeller just has such good chemistry with both Kemba and Batum. He's just kind of one of those players, not a lot of box score stats, but always a plus-minus god. And we were just very thin up front without him. It was just relied on Dwight, who, as we mentioned, has kind of some baggage and some issues. And we always just seem to miss Zeller when he's out there because just how solid he is on both ends. And then, of course, Batum missing the first few weeks of the season and never looking right the same were probably the two biggest ones.
Yeah, Evan just mentioned it. For me, it's got to be Nick Batum. I mean, last year he was kind of, or not last year, but the year before he was kind of like a mini LeBron. He averaged like 15-4-4, and last year he just kind of took a step down. And I think it was because of that UCL. He just didn't really have that full off season. Got hurt in the preseason, so he missed the first 2 months. Obviously, that allowed Jeremy Lamb to step up into a bigger role, which was a good thing for the Hornets. But at the same time, losing Nick Batum for that time, he just really wasn't right the whole season. So hopefully he can get better and just improve on what was a really, really bad season for him last year.
I think it's got to be Nicholas Batum for me. Obviously, $108 million. What's the actual deal? I don't have it down.
124.
124, even better. Yeah. So for me, it's got to be that injury because you obviously brought on Batum to be, you know, the number two, number three guy alongside Kemba, depending on where you wanted to put Dwight last season. And Batum, when he's healthy, and I mean, his days in Portland, I mean, he's a really good wing defender. Obviously, he's got great length. He can do a little bit of everything. And obviously, like we mentioned, the elbow injury, and then he's had some Achilles issues. He just never looked right. And whenever you have Achilles injuries, I don't know, they tend to linger. So now I worry about how he, you know, plays this season. Is he losing more? Like, does he lose a step? Is he as effective off the dribble? Can he jump off it? Those are my concerns going forward.
Yeah, definitely all those injuries. And I could see the Batum side as well as the Zeller side. But moving to a positive note, what was the highlight of last season for the Hornets?
Not a lot, but if you had to pick one, Kemba having another all-star season and really just cementing himself as an all-star caliber point guard was, I mean, definitely a highlight, even though the numbers are about the same as the year before. And then as Dylan mentioned, Jeremy Lamb, he was probably the only other player besides Kemba, I'm confident in saying, had a good year and improved upon the year before. Became a solid bench scorer, improved his passing, improved his three-point shooting, defense, was really just better all around. So I guess those two players were the highlights.
Yeah, if I've got to pick one moment, it's got to be Kemba Walker surpassing Del Curry as the Hornets' all-time leading scorer. Most people just, I mean, they didn't realize how close he actually was to becoming that scorer. He's only 28 years old, and he's already a franchise leader in points. So I think that's a feat in itself. And, I mean, you already said it, Evan. He had another all-star caliber season. Jeremy Lamb improved. Hopefully we can get Malik Monk to improve this year, but those are probably the highlights of last year.
My highlight is, I mean, the highlight moment is kind of that 30-30 game by Dwight Howard against the Nets. Sorry, Nick.
Thanks for bringing it up.
I've just never seen numbers like that. So like, to me, like that was probably like the highlight game. But definitely it was Kemba Walker, and probably more so the fact of how, adamant Kemba was about wanting to stay in Charlotte, for the remainder of his career and how badly he wants to stay. So I think that's a highlight. And then of course, as you guys mentioned, I mean, he has kind of solidified himself as an all-star, especially in the East. And his three-point shot, his jump shot wasn't this good when he came into the league, the long-range ball, but he continues to get better and better.
Yeah, Kemba had a great season, but I'm going to go with Evan. I think Jeremy Lamb really showed a lot of improvements. He impressed me in kind of proving that he's a rotational piece in the NBA. But on the negative side, biggest disappointment of last season for the Hornets?
Oh, God, we can make a list. But we already talked about Batum. His whole season was disappointing on both ends. But for me, it's MKG and Frank, and they're similar. Both young players that we drafted high, and both are just kind of okay. MKG has yet to develop a jumper or, you know, an offensive game, and his defense is probably a little overrated. He's good, not great. And then Frank, good shooter and will have a big game every now and then, but just is so bad on defense. And his ceiling seems pretty low due to lack of athleticism. So their lack of development or even regression was kind of the biggest disappointment for me.
Yeah, I mean, Frank Kaminsky didn't get better at all. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, I believe, actually got worse than he was last year, and he's only 25 years old. He's going to drop out of the rotation this year because they drafted a guy who can do everything he can do and some in Miles Bridges. So I think those are definitely the two guys that really disappointed me. If I had to go with another, I already mentioned him, but it's a lot because of his injuries and that UCL injury. Nick Batum, I mean, we're paying him $25 million a year, over 5 years too. And just to see him come back and regress rather than actually get better, which you don't want to see at this stage in his career, it's not very good to see that.
Yeah, I'm pretty much right there with you guys. For me, Batum is probably the biggest disappointment. But whenever you come back from injuries, there's always kind of that you got to get back in the flow of things. I don't know, what did he miss? 2 months, 3 months? I know he missed a lot of the first half of the season. And then, of course, like you guys mentioned, Frank the Tank, he is dreadful defensively. He's just so slow and unathletic. And then on FanDuel, I seem to pick him on every night when he doesn't have an outburst of threes. So for me, it's probably those two guys. And as you guys mentioned, and as you said, Evan, MKG has yet to develop a jump shot. He doesn't even have a jump shot form developed yet. Like, he is just really far behind on learning how to shoot the basketball.
Yeah, you guys pretty much nailed it. From the injuries to the lack of player development for those guys, you know, it's a couple disappointments, like Evan mentioned. We can make a list. But moving on to the ranking, the Hornets came in at number 22 in the OTG power rankings created by the staff. What are your thoughts on this? Too high, too low, fair ranking?
It's pretty close. I think I put them at 20, so I guess a little too low. I actually think the Hornets will be a little better than the general NBA public of Twitter thinks, but they're still going to be a slightly below average team, so that's about right.
I'm actually opposite of Evan here.
I've got them
24th or 25th, just depending on the Chicago Bulls and how they perform. But I've got the Nets and Suns above the Hornets, actually. I just think those two teams are a little bit more complete in terms of just players and their development and consistency. The Hornets have a lot of one-way players. And any given night, they can be one of the best teams in the league, but more so it's the latter. They're just wretched to watch sometimes. And I do think the Nets are more consistent. I think the Suns, they're going to be a little bit more flashy. They added more consistency in Trevor Ariza, Mikal Bridges. They also had the number one overall pick in DeAndre Ayton. The one problem with them is point guard, but I think they'll be fine, and I think they'll be better than the Hornets this year.
Yeah, I think this is pretty fair. I don't know if I'd move them that much lower, that much higher, but, you know, to 20 to 24, this is probably where they are, unless they prove us otherwise. I mean, the East is weak, so I wouldn't be surprised if this team is healthy, unless say Batum is, you know, back to the Batum who earned that deal he got, and Zeller is healthy. Maybe this team can jump up a few more spots, but I think it's pretty fair with Kemba Walker. Excuse me, with Kemba Walker really being the only player who you know is going to show up on a nightly basis.
Yeah, I would say this ranking's pretty fair. If anything, I'd kind of lean with Dylan a little bit. You maybe could put them a slot lower, but I think at this point in time, they're right around that range from about the 24 to 20 range. But moving on from there, you know, we mentioned Steve Clifford's out as the head coach. Now they brought in James Borrego. What are your thoughts on the new head coach?
I liked it. I initially thought Steve Clifford did a good job in Charlotte. He had two playoff trips his first three seasons, did some good things, but I thought it was time for a change. I thought the players started to tune him out last year. I mean, Borrego obviously comes from a great organization in San Antonio, a lot of experience, and I believe he was an interim coach with Orlando too. He'll bring some changes and more ball movement, spacing, faster pace, and just a new identity, and hopefully get the younger players more of a role. So he's unproven, but I'm excited for the change and hopeful that he'll be good.
I am so excited to see the different lineup changes that Borrego is going to introduce, mainly because I want Michael Kidd-Gilchrist out of the lineup. but yeah, he's probably going to play Jeremy Lamb at the two, Nicholas Batum at the three. I'm a little bit hesitant on who he's going to play at the four. It's either going to be Frank Kaminsky or Marvin Williams, and most likely Cody Zeller at the five, just to have that pick and roll combo with Kemba Walker. All in all, I'm really excited to see just more diverse offensive play rather than throwing it into the post to Dwight Howard every other possession.
Yeah, I mean, they got a Popovich prodigy, so they have a new style coming in. You know, I think Borrego is the right kind of guy to try and fix what's been happening in Charlotte. Obviously, they've always been defensive-minded with Clifford, but they just can't seem to get over the hump. They just remain, like I said, between that 9 and, you know, 12 range. They just hover right in the middle of the East. They go through some really hot stretches, and then they just kind of fall apart. And it's time to change the culture, try and mix it up. I know Borrego, I listened to the Adrian Wojnarowski podcast, and they had Borrego on, and he was talking about how he's already reached out to Kemba. He's had dinner with almost all of the players. And you like to see that. You know, this is a guy who's coming in here and trying to, you know, become close with all of his players, which I think is important.
Yeah, it definitely seems like something Popovich would do. He seems like he's big on team dinners as well. So, and I think Borrego's the right guy. He's been mentioned a lot of times with other coaching vacancies. So interesting to see how he does with the Hornets. But moving on to the draft, they selected Miles Bridges with their first round pick. what were your thoughts on drafting Bridges? Obviously, we got Dylan in here, the draft guru. But, Evan, what were your thoughts on bringing in Bridges?
I like the pick. He did 2 years in college, so his body's a little more filled out. He's super strong. He's athletic. We haven't had a forward who can, like, really score in forever. Plus, he showed some good defensive versatility in guarding multiple positions, good rebounder. I'm not sure how high his ceiling is, but I think he'll be a very good player for a long time. Where there's not a ton of pressure on him, we can bring him along slowly. I would have been okay if we swung for the fences and drafted Porter. And I know Dylan really likes, what's his name? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But I was fine with the Bridges pick. I don't think he has any chance, or of course there's always a chance of being a bust or anything like that. So I think he'll be good.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of this pick. Obviously, I was higher on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and I just really liked the fit between Gilgeous-Alexander and Malik Monk, and that's really what I wanted to see in the, you know, the future Charlotte Hornets backcourt. As cliche as it sounds, but Kemba Walker is going to be a free agent next offseason, and I'm not confident that he's going to re-sign, so adding that other backcourt piece for the future would have been a little bit more safe, in my opinion. But Miles Bridges, I mean, he can do it all. He's not going to be a volume shooter, but he could be a 3-and-D type of guy moving into the moving into the future. But it's not a great pick, but at the same time, it's not a horrible pick. He's a safe guy. He's what they want to do right now, which is they want to win right now. So they got a win now player, and he's also going to develop a little bit more going forward.
Yeah, I think Bridges is what you just said, Dylan, spot on. He helps them win now. You know, he's got a more NBA ready body. You know, he's 6'7", 230 pounds. 17-7 guy in college. Shot 36% from three, 45% from the field. I really like him. You know, 3-and-D. And he's a young piece. He's a good young piece around a team that's got a lot of bets on it.
Yeah, definitely. Do you guys think that he could contribute this year, or how much do you think he will contribute, if at all?
I think he could certainly contribute this year. I don't think he starts, but I think he'll get minutes early on, maybe even just, 10, 15. And then as the year goes on, I'm sure, they'll put a little bit more on his plate and expand his minutes. But I think he's ready to be in the rotation right away.
If somebody gets hurt, whether it's Jeremy Lamb or Nick Batum, I think he's going to start. And, I don't say that lightly either. He's going to have to prove himself over Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, over Dwayne Bacon, who we drafted last year, over Malik Monk, who we also drafted last year. And I think at some point he will end up starting this year. I'm just not sure when. If, like I said, if Jeremy Lamb gets hurt, they're probably going to slide Batum back to the two and probably play Bridges at the three. But I think he will actually contribute this year. He probably will be maybe our seventh or eighth man in the rotation, just that rotational forward who can shoot, who can rebound, who can defend, just all that stuff you want in a forward.
I'll keep it short and sweet. Watch out, MKG. I think MKG could lose a lot of his minutes, maybe even get dealt away if Miles Bridges comes in and is effective early.
Yeah, Bridges' minutes definitely going to be a guy to keep an eye on. Talking about the second-round pick, number 34 overall, Devontae Graham. What are your thoughts on him?
Well, just from what I saw in summer league, I don't watch college as much, so I didn't know as much about him, but I really liked what I saw in terms of passing and just his competitive toughness on defense, really battled, got after it. He's not a good shooter. He's going to have to work on that. I don't think he'll play a lot right away because we signed Tony Parker for Kemba's backup, which I hate, but it is what it is. But I'm sure once Parker Neville gets hurt, Graham will start getting some minutes. And I like what I saw early on from him.
Don't expect Graham to play this year is what I would say. I mean, we signed Tony Parker, $5 million deal. We've got Malik Monk who could play some backup point guard minutes. But Graham is going to be that maybe rotational guy, maybe reserve point guard who plays in the last 2 minutes of a game if the Hornets are losing by 40 points, which they inevitably will be at some point this year.
High hopes this year, huh?
Yeah, very high hopes. But Devontae Graham, he's a solid defender, and I was really impressed with his passing in summer league. I didn't like the pick initially on draft night, but he's really grown on me.
I mean, he's from North Carolina, so he's a hometown guy, which would help sell seats. But yeah, I don't expect him to play this year. He's a good 3-point shooter. He shoots the same 3-point percentage as he did from the field, so that's not great. But yeah, you know, he'll get some time in the G League. Maybe if somebody gets hurt, he'll get called up. I don't expect overly too much.
Moving on to the trade front, you know, they ended up bringing back Bismack Biyombo, who was in Charlotte a few years ago. What are your thoughts on Biyombo being back?
Do we have to do this topic?
Yeah. We got to. This is what the fans are waiting for, Evan.
I know. I just don't care that he's Bismack Biyombo will be the third center. And I guess we traded Mozgov that we got from the Dwight deal for him. So swapping bad contracts, essentially. Bismack Biyombo is slightly more useful as a third center in case there's an injury. So I'm okay with it, but I don't think he'll get any minutes this year unless there's an injury because he's just bad.
For what it's worth, we essentially traded Dwight Howard for Bismack Biyombo and 2 second-round picks along with Devontae Graham. And I'm okay with that. I mean, Biyombo, he's not going to play. And we've got Billy Hernan Gomez. We've got Cody Zeller. I think Biyombo, like I said, with Devontae Graham, he's going to play in late game situations if they're either winning or losing by a ton of points. But I mean, he's a defensive center. So for what it's worth, he's a rim protector who I guess he could split some minutes with Billy Hernan Gomez if he puts up a fight. But he's being paid $17 million this year. So, I mean... not a good contract by any means, but at least it's a more productive guy than Timofey Mozgov.
Yeah, definitely not a great contract, but definitely a better player than Mozgov. You know, he's still 25, he's going to be 26. And like you guys mentioned, I mean, he's probably going to be the third string. I wouldn't be shocked if he plays him into the second, if he gets the second string role as a backup center. He does have good rim protection. He's a decent rebounder. I don't know. It's going to depend on how, you know, Hernan Gomez plays this season. Obviously, being all NBA rookie his first year to not playing much at all last season, I think he has a lot to prove. So I don't know if he's for sure the backup center. But Biyombo does have a chance to be that guy. But yeah, contract wise, this is bad. But he's at least more useful than Mozgov.
Yeah, you guys pretty much nailed it with the statement. You know, he provides more than Mozgov. He's more useful than him. The contract is still terrible, but you know, at least he can do something for you on the court. Moving on to free agent signings, you know, another area that Evan's definitely going to love, Tony Parker coming to Charlotte.
Boo. just so pointless. He's 37 years old, too much money. Every now and then, I'm sure he'll have an all right, you know, rewind the clock kind of game, but he's inevitably going to get hurt just because he has been the past couple years. And we could have gotten a better player, basically. I mean, your Nets should sign Shabazz Napier for about half the price, and he's a way better player. So that's mainly my main problem with it. I don't think it really does anything, but he is slightly better than Michael Carter-Williams, so that's a plus.
Yeah, it's not a great signing at all, but at the end of the day, the Hornets and going through a dumpster bin of backup point guards is going to be inevitable. So out of the guys we could have gotten, I'd say he's okay, I guess, but it's not good, not great, not bad either. Yeah, he's just going to play that backup point guard role that we haven't really had since Jeremy Lin.
Yeah, I think he'll be an okay backup. I mean, it depends on what you guys are expecting. I mean, I think he'll help them be more competitive if they're trying to go for that 8 seed. I think Tony Parker is the right backup to have after having Michael Carter-Williams Jr. last season, who, as I know, is Dylan's favorite player of all time. So Tony Parker brings you some. He's also a leadership, and like Borrego obviously has worked with Parker before in San Antonio, so there's a relationship there. Parker does probably understand what Borrego wants to do with the system. So I don't think it's all bad, but like you mentioned, Evan, it feels like every year he has some kind of leg injury, whether it's a hamstring, a quad injury. His legs have been breaking down the last couple of years.
Well, Corey kind of mentioned it. How much do you think signing Tony Parker has to do with James Borrego being the new head coach? Do you think that's one of the main reasons they brought him in?
That definitely has to be one of the main reasons. Familiar with the system Borrego wants to play. He could be a veteran for the younger guys in the locker room, a player that Borrego can trust and lean on and count on, you know, implementing new things to the other players. So that part I get. I just don't think that's enough to override all the negatives.
Yeah, there's a lot of connections between Tony Parker and this team. Obviously, there's a French connection between Nick Batum and Tony Parker, along with the Spurs connection between James Borrego and Tony Parker. So I'd say it has something to do with it, but it's just not a great fit, like Evan said.
Yeah, I'm pretty much copy and paste. I think Borrego for sure had some kind of influence on bringing Parker. It's a guy who obviously, like everyone has mentioned, played in San Antonio, and Borrego wants to set up probably a Spurs-like culture in Charlotte, which is, I feel like, what every Spurs descendant does. So I feel like it was to try and get this Hornets team to be more like the Spurs.
Yeah, what you guys said definitely makes sense, you know, the connection there and then trying to set the culture. Looking at departures, trade-wise, they got rid of Julian Stone and Dwight Howard. What is this team going to lose getting rid of Dwight, or is it, you know, addition by subtraction type of thing?
Dwight wasn't horrible last year. He did double-double, good rebounder, solid defense, but I think it is a bit of an addition by subtraction. I think Zeller just fits with the starters better. Like, it's a little more spacing, doesn't need the ball, and his turnovers and just post-ups won't derail the offense. So I think it is a little bit of addition by subtraction.
Yeah, I mean, Dwight Howard, he wasn't great, wasn't horrible. He did get that double-double. He averaged like 2 blocks. So he was stalling the offense, and I do think that Cody Zeller is a lot better of a fit. I mean, I've said it a million times. I just believe, just all in all, Cody Zeller is a better player than Dwight Howard. His pick and roll game is so much more advanced than Dwight Howard. I mean, it just meshes a lot better with what Kemba Walker can do offensively.
Yeah, I think for me, it's more so that the young guys get to play. Dwight Howard is obviously getting up there in age. And with the locker room stuff, why bother? You got Cody Zeller, who I'm also a big fan of from his time in Indiana. He shows when he's on the court a lot of potential. It's got to be healthy. And I think Hermann Gomez, me and Nick mentioned on the Knicks preview, the guy who was an all-NBA rookie and then got no playing time. And I think we got to see what he has. Obviously, Hornacek didn't want to play him, but now he's got a chance to actually play in Charlotte. So who knows? That could be a really dynamic, you know, center pairing. If you got Cody Zeller, then Hermann Gomez, it's they're both young. I like it for the future.
I know this isn't a Wizards pod, but obviously you guys watched every Hornets game last season. How much do you think Dwight's going to impact that locker room, and do you think he's going to cause problems in Washington?
Possibly. I mean, you don't know for sure, and I do think his locker room issues were a little overblown, at least with us last year, and I actually think he makes more sense for a team like Washington that's contending and has real playoff aspirations, and I just think he'll fit better with their personnel too, but you obviously can't rule it out based on his history.
At some point, a locker room has to become insufferable. And that Wizards locker room was already horrible. They added Austin Rivers and Dwight Howard to that. And I'm not saying that they're not going to make the playoffs or anything. I'm just saying that locker room is going to be probably the worst in the NBA.
Damn. Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned this before to Nick. I think it's like the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So like Bradley Beal and John Wall have had their beef, so maybe they unite to hate Dwight Howard together. So I don't know. It's not like from a basketball standpoint, like I'm really intrigued to see what a big three of Bradley Beal, John Wall, and Dwight Howard looks like. Because on paper, that could be like just really good. I mean, alley-oops and fast breaks to John Wall, to Dwight Howard. It's obviously a way better center than Gortat, but the locker room stuff is just so tough to gauge. I mean, if this guy is an asshole, which has been pretty much declared now and he's been labeled as, you know, John Wall and Bradley Beal seem to not like, you know, having any type of clash against other players. And Dwight Howard just seems to clash with somebody or multiple people everywhere he goes.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be something to keep an eye on next season. Dwight's always been in the headlines for mostly the wrong reason since he left Orlando. But looking at some other departures free agent-wise, they lost Trevion Graham, Michael Carter-Williams, Marcus Paige. What are they going to lose, you know, not keeping these guys?
Well, you know I love my boy Graham. Was really solid in the second year last year, potential to be a 3-and-D kind of player. But our cap situation is such a mess that we couldn't even afford to keep him, which is a bit of a shame. Michael Carter-Williams obviously is good riddance. He was just, even though his defense was actually pretty good last year, just so probably the worst offensive point guard in the NBA, honestly. So Parker is a slight add. So neither of them, you know, will be a huge loss, but I do wish we could have kept Graham.
How dare you slander Michael Carter-Williams? But yeah, we're not really losing much of anything. We had a log jam at forward. We still do. So Trevion Graham, as much as I liked him as a player, he worked hard on both sides of the court. But he's going to be a good add for the Nets. In terms of Marcus Paige, I mean, I believe he played in like two games and missed the only shots he took. So.
Really successful.
He was good in college, but he's solid. Not good in the pros. And I think we lost Mangok Mathang as well. He was a center for Louisville a couple of years ago. Another two-way guy. He didn't do anything for us either. So, yeah, in terms of who we lost, I mean, we also lost the greatest player of all time in Michael Carter-Williams. But other than that, we didn't really lose anything major.
Yeah, bigger loss, LeBron in Cleveland or Michael Carter-Williams in Charlotte?
MCW. It's got to be MCW. He's going to take over that starting spot from Melo and average 30, 20, and 10.
Jeez. I mean, I don't really think they miss any of these guys. I think Graham was kind of intriguing. But you got in, you know, Miles Bridges and some other young guys in, so... this is to me again a dip. Whoa, what was that word? Addition by subtraction.
Okay, yeah, Corey making up words on the show now. But moving on from departures, starting five for the Hornets on opening night.
My guess is Kemba, Lamb at the two. We move Batum to the three. I think Marvin starts at the four. Frank's just too bad on defense to start. And I think Zeller at the five would be my guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think nothing on this roster other than point guard is settled, like, in terms of starting. I think Batum, it's either going to be the two or the three. I think that shooting guard spot is up for debate a little bit between Malik Monk and Jeremy Lamb, depending on how good Malik Monk is, which, honestly, we have no idea how good he is. He might end up starting some this season. At the power forward, I'm not a huge fan of Frank Kaminsky, but I do like him alongside Cody Zeller a lot more than I like him alongside Billy Hernan Gomez for defensive reasons. Like, if we have Hernan Gomez and Kaminsky together on the court, anyone is going to be able to make a layup on us, and that's not an exaggeration. So I do think Marvin Williams will end up starting. He's just a better two-way player. And Cody Zeller is just a better fit, although that center spot has been up for debate a little bit recently.
Yes, I think Tony Parker starts. No, I'm just kidding. I think it's Kemba Walker. I like your point, Dylan. No one really knows what Malik Monk is going to really look like. Obviously, he didn't get much play time with Clifford. So I am intrigued to see if he does win it out, but I think Jeremy Lamb right now is a front runner. Nicholas Batum. Could Miles Bridges play a small ball four, or no? Is that out of the question?
He can. Yeah. Obviously,
he probably doesn't start. It's too early for him to start, probably, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he could probably start day one. Granted, he wouldn't be a good starter, but he could start.
Right. I mean, I would be interested in him at the four, but I think realistically, Marvin Williams and then Cody Zeller to round it out.
Yeah, that's the lineup I'm going with. Kemba, Lamb, Batum, Marvin Williams, and Zeller. But, you know, Dylan already kind of mentioned this. Where do you guys think there's going to be a position battle? You know, who's going to be fighting for a starting spot or rotation minutes and whatnot?
Well, the wing is a little log jammed. I mean, because there's Lamb, Batum, Dwayne Bacon, Miles Bridges, and then MKG, of course. So seeing the rotations and the lineups and how Borrego plays those minutes will be interesting. Someone will get lost in the shuffle, and then most likely MKG, and then up front, Frank Kaminsky. He's probably better at the five, but there's Hernan Gomez Zeller there. As Dylan mentioned, at the four next to Hernan Gomez, that's probably out of the question for defensive purposes. So those Frank and MKG at those two spots, I think, is the most intriguing thing to watch.
Yeah. I mean, if Kemba Walker gets traded, then we have no idea who's going to start, honestly.
Oh, God. Like,
whether you're going to go pro-ready players or developmental players, we have no idea if Kemba Walker gets traded. But as for right now, I guess the only one I could possibly say right now that is a positional battle is center. Just between Hernan Gomez and Zeller for reasons I've already mentioned.
Yeah, I think the position battle for sure starts at the two guard, you know, whether or not it's Lamb or Malik Monk. And then, like you guys mentioned, there's a logjam with big men, a logjam with forwards. I think power forward could be up for grabs, obviously, too. I mean, if they wanted to go small, you could play Bridges. If you wanted to go big, you got Kaminsky. For me, it's those three positions. I think primarily it's going to be shooting guard and power forward. I think Cody Zeller has that starting job locked up unless something blows me out of the water, and he doesn't.
Dylan touched on this. What would you put as a percentage chance that Kemba would be traded this season?
Ooh, I think it's probably around 50-50. Charlotte seems keen on keeping him for the long haul. Obviously, we had two chances to trade him already at the deadline last year and at the draft, and we haven't. Sounds like Kemba, so far, at least through his comments, wants to stay in Charlotte as well, and we want to compete and make the playoffs. But there's also a strong chance we start the season off, you know, poorly, and we just have to face reality. And Kemba Mays shows some signs towards leaning in the summer, and then if things start poorly, I think you have no choice but to trade him at the deadline.
At the end of last year, it didn't really seem like this team had a direction. But as of right now, it looks like they're going to try and make the playoffs, and trading Kemba Walker doesn't seem like it would be a part of that. So, I mean, like Evan said, if they start the season off poorly, especially with an easier schedule like they have, I think Kemba Walker, it's more than likely that he's moved. But as of right now, I'd give it like a 20% chance. I can't see it happening. You know, with everybody from really both sides saying that they want to get something done. I mean, he can't sign a contract that's his worth until free agency actually opens. And by that time, I'm sure teams will get in contact with him and ask him what his values really are. And he's a really loyal guy. I'll give him that. But, you know, when a team like the Knicks that has Kristaps Porzingis, if they come knocking on his door, is he going to turn them down for the Hornets, who are our second best player, is Jeremy Lamb?
Yeah, I mean, and he's from New York as well.
Man, it's really tough. I think Michael Jordan's pretty unpredictable too, like as an owner. Like, I don't know which direction he really wants for this team. It feels like he's just like going through the motions as an owner. I mean, if this team falls flat on its face, like I'll give it like a 30% chance that Kemba Walker's traded. But like, I don't see it. I have a hard time believing they're going to actually move on unless it becomes clear. Like, say they come out the gate and they're like, I don't know, like 10 and 23, or like they're just a really bad slow start. And then Kemba's just like, all right, like I've tried, but I've just had enough with this. And that's the only way. I think the only way Kemba really gets dealt is if Kemba says he wants to get dealt.
I think there's a 33% chance, kind of like what you guys mentioned, you know. It seems like everybody's saying the right thing, but that tends to be when you get the most value for somebody, because it's not like you lost all leverage. So if someone comes and offers them a package, you know, maybe Kemba can get moved. But would you guys say it would be the right move to move Kemba, or is it the right move to keep him?
You know, that's, it always depends on what the package is for him. If we can get a monster offer and either a high draft pick or a good young player in return, and plus maybe unload a bad contract and a combo, then I'd say you probably do it. But you definitely don't want to sell low. Kemba's a really, really good player.
Kemba Walker is, he's certainly a talent, but right now point guard is the most saturated position in the league. And I just don't think we're going to get the package that we want. I think the most somebody's going to offer, he's got like 12 months left on his contract. Actually, not even that. It's more like 10 months. He's got that much left on his contract. He's making $12 million a year. So it's not like we can get somebody in a higher salary range for him. Nobody's going to give a high draft pick to someone that they don't even know is going to stay past next June. So I'm not sure that we can get the offer that we want, and they're not going to take salary they're not going to take salary along with the player, because they're trying to stay below the tax threshold, and they've had a pretty tough time doing that considering they took Bismack Biyombo for Dwight Howard. But I've been saying we should move Kemba for about a year and a half now, and it hasn't happened. So I'd say it's the right move to trade him, but I just can't really see it happening.
I think realistically, it's tough. So if the Hornets, what does this team want to do? I guess that's what it comes down to. Like, do the Hornets want to try and win, or do they see the fact that Kemba Walker is also, what is he? He's almost in the prime of his career, right? He's 27, 28.
Yeah.
Right. So he's entering the prime of his career. Is it worth keeping him for his prime when you're, fighting for an 8 spot, or do you want to flip him? And I agree with Dylan. You're not going to get a high draft pick for Kemba. You may get a mid lottery pick, somewhere as high as maybe like 6, 7, but like, you're not going to get a top 5 pick for Kemba Walker. At least I don't think you would. And then the young player, if you're trying to get one for Kemba, again, like, I don't know how much value people see in a 1-year rental, and what contending teams really need a point guard. I don't know. It's really tough. Once we know what the Hornets' direction is, where they want to just kind of compete and do like a retool of some sorts. But realistically, personally, I think they're better off trading Kemba and just trying to build around these young guys of Monk and Cody Zeller, Hermann Gomez. These guys are all young. Maybe try and get a younger point guard. As Dylan mentioned, point guard seems to be saturated at this point in time. There's a lot of young guys coming in the league, and you can find somebody to replace Kemba. Maybe not be as good as Kemba, but you don't need necessarily to find a true Kemba Walker replacement if you have this young core.
Now, Corey, I know you're a Pacers fan. And your starting point guard is right now Darren Collison, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. You making me an offer? Should I call Kevin Pritchard?
Oh. Now,
what would you give as a contending team in the Eastern Conference for an all-star caliber point guard who shall not be named?
What's the bonus, or Miles Turner interests you?
I think Miles Turner would. Now, the thing is, we have a lot of centers on the roster.
I'll take one of them.
So if you could like throw in a pick and maybe Aaron Holiday, maybe.
I mean, I don't know if they'd move Aaron. I mean, if you want Aaron Holiday, you could have Aaron Holiday. I think it would be more like Darren Collison, and then, I don't know. I think a center could get moved for the Pacers. They probably don't want to, but they're gonna have to pay both those guys max deals, or near max deals. Or Darren Collison, maybe if TJ Leaf, if his value was to be upped, and then maybe our draft pick, or we'll talk. You want to make the phone call later? We'll talk. I think it could get done, because they were one of the teams last year near the deadline, which people, like, I saw a lot of rumors with, should the Pacers go after Kemba Walker? And I think a dynamic scorer like that next to Victor Oladipo with Tyreek Evans, that Pacers team would be really fun to watch.
What are your thoughts on it, Evan? What would you want the Pacers to send over for Kemba?
Definitely a pick. I mean, if they want to give Miles Turner, I would definitely be very intrigued in that. Aaron Holiday, you'd probably have to throw in Collison just to match the salary. I think he's right around what Kemba makes. And if they can, I would try to unload maybe like MKG or Frank too on him. Something like that. But if we could get, I would even take TJ Leaf for cheap too. Just another good young player.
Yeah, we can make it work.
I think it's one of the more realistic trade destinations for sure.
Yeah, it seems like there's definitely a couple avenues for you guys to kind of go for. You know, the Pacers have a couple young pieces that they're unsure about, and they maybe want to contend if they can get an all-star player like Kemba. It could really be a big push for them. But moving on from there, breakout starter for the Hornets this year.
Ooh, breakout starter. Well,
this is really tough. Like, I was thinking about this for a while, and I was like, which guy is going to break out? Like, I don't know who's going to get that much better.
You know, speaking of Kemba, I still think he has another gear to get to, and I don't think we've seen the best of him yet. So far, he's kind of been around 22-5. I think he can average 25 points per game and around 7 assists. I think playing with more spacing, more versatile lineups, and a faster pace will only help him. He's a relentless worker. He gets better every single year. I wouldn't be surprised if Kemba has a career year. And if he does in the first half of the season, that could help us get a little more if we do trade him. So I'll go with Kemba still improving.
I just saw the word breakout, and there's really only one player I could think about, and that's Malik Monk. If he takes maybe, I mean, not just one step, but multiple steps forward in his game, I think he could end up starting and maybe averaging around that 17 points per game mark. Maybe that's a little bit generous, but I think Malik Monk is certainly a guy to watch.
I'm going to go with Cody Zeller. Cody Zeller started 58 games in 2016-2017, averaged 10-6. Last year in just 33 games, he averaged 7-5. He's never played more than 27 minutes per game. He's going to be the starter. He's going to have a lot of run time. He's going to be playing a lot with the ones. I think he can, if he can progress and Kemba Walker can get him in some pick and rolls, I think Cody Zeller could have a breakout year. It's nothing crazy, but maybe like a 12 and 7 type of guy.
I like it. I think Zeller's definitely a candidate. I like Evan's pick. I think Kemba could take another step with Borrego, making an offense that's a little bit smoother for him, and they can kind of find some lineups that make his life easier. But breakout bench player.
I'll take Dylan's Monk. In the last six games of the season last year, I think he averaged 20 points per game. He only played one game in the summer league, but he looked absolutely filthy. His stronger body, really elite shot maker, really athletic, can get a shot when he wants. He'll get plenty of opportunities to play on and off the ball. I do think 17 points is a little generous, but I think he could definitely do the 12 to 15 range.
Yeah, if I had to pick a guy, I'd go with Dwayne Bacon. He's been working all offseason. He is the guy. I mean, he was pretty good last year. He was starting to play over MKG a little bit towards the end of the season. But if he can continue on that momentum, then I think he could really be a quality bench player, maybe around like 7-4 this year, maybe a little bit better than that.
Yeah, for me, it's going to be Miles Bridges. I think Miles Bridges is going to be a big-time rotational player for this team. Might even, end up starting some games later on in the season. I don't think he's going to be like in the Rookie of the Year race by any means, but I wouldn't be surprised if Bridges averages, 13-5, 13-6, and those six being rebounds. So for me, it's Bridges.
I'm going to go with Malik Monk. I think what Evan and Dylan said, he's going to get more minutes this year. There's a lot of talent there. I was kind of disappointed we didn't see more of him last season. So I'm looking at Malik Monk to have a breakout season and possibly end up by the end of the year, like Dylan said, he could start. Season predictions, though. Best case scenario for the Hornets.
Best case scenario, I would say, is probably around 44 wins, and they're like the 6 or 7 seed in the East. That means Kemba took a big step, and all their young guys showed improvement. The rookies contribute right away, and they stay reasonably healthy. I would say that's their absolute best-case scenario.
my best case scenario, and I mean, this is like the only time where I've ever been higher on the Hornets than Evan. And I said my best case scenario is 45 wins, like about that range. But around the 6 seed in the East sounds about right. You know, that's just if everybody stays healthy, Kemba's not traded, Monk takes a step, Nick Batum returns to his old form, Frank Kaminsky actually starts to rebound, just all everything starts to come together. I think that's the best case scenario.
I'm right there with you, Dylan. I think best case scenario is a 6 seed. You know, Kemba Walker is an all-star again. Nicholas Batum maybe is in the race for an all-star spot. Cody Zeller pops off. Malik Monk and Bridges earn valuable playing time. And, you know, Brago gets his system in check. Yeah, I think 6 seed is probably the best case scenario. You know, whether, I don't know how many wins that is in the East. So for a 6 seed could, you know, just be 48 wins. But I think, yeah, that's good.
I guess I'm a touch lower than you guys. I think 43 wins, 7 seed, you know, the guys make a jump. You see some player development. Brego puts in a nice system. I think there'll be a couple injuries, but they should be able to get over it. But worst case scenario.
Worst case scenario is like 27 wins. And that means we start off horribly and we trade Kemba and then just kind of punt the season. Plus throw some injuries in there, probably Zeller or Batum, Parker. I would say that's the worst case scenario.
I'm actually, I'm back to my standard form. I'm well below Evan here. I said 18 wins is the.
Oh, it can't be that bad.
That's, you know, Kemba gets hurt for the season. Nick Batum doesn't get better. Frank Kaminsky regresses, and none of our wings perform up to expectations, despite us having like 18 of them on the roster.
That's brutal.
I think worst case scenario is they're a 10 seed. They have, you know, they're 10 games under 500, like usual. They have some shining moments, but, some of the bigger guys get hurt, or maybe they end up trading away Kemba Walker. So I'm gonna say like 34 wins, 32 wins.
I think worst case for me is 28 wins, you know, similar to what you guys were saying, you know, Kemba either goes down or Kemba is traded and, you know, they just don't have that playmaker or scorer that can match Kemba's output, and 28 wins is where they end up and they get a nice pick. Actual prediction, though.
So I'm a little higher. I think they'll win 39 games this year, be slightly better than last year, but be the 9th seed in the East and just miss the playoffs because that's what we do. And so a slightly below average team, but I think a little better than most people think they will be.
Yeah, again, I'm well below Evan here. My actual prediction is 30 and 52, which, I mean, it's not great. It's like a bottom 7 team or so. And, you know, I'm just not expecting this. I mean, we're a painfully mediocre team with a ton of old players, and those old players aren't getting any younger. So I think just all of those factors combined, it's just not a good combination for the Hornets.
Actual prediction, I'm saying this team finishes 9th in the East, you know, 2 or 3 games out. They just miss out. They show some good signs of life. The team actually looks like they have a direction. Kemba stays, and then the big question becomes, does Kemba stay?
For me, what if I told you they're going to have the same amount of wins again? 36. I think they're going to miss out.
Oh, my God. I would walk into the ocean.
I think it's a real possibility. I mean, I think they'll be right on the cusp and be in, you know, playoff contention at points, but then fall off towards the end of the year. Like Dylan said, there is some concern with injuries. You know, a lot of the guys that get banged up typically are banged up a lot. Batum, you know, obviously he's not going to deal with a UCL again, but he did have injuries when he was in Portland. You know, Zeller's had injuries before, and like you said, some of the older guys could be banged up, and then is the player development actually going to happen? So I think they'll be on the cusp of the playoffs, but just miss it with 36 wins again.
That sounds about right.
I'm sorry, guys. At least Dylan won't be disappointed, you know.
Every single year.
As long as it's not 36, I'll be okay. Even if it's 37 or 35, I just can't have it be the exact same.
I'd actually rather it be 35 than 37 because at least you get a little bit better of a draft.
That's true. I agree.
And with the increased odds this year, it's, I mean, there's like a 10% chance for a team. Like let's say you're the 11th again, like the Hornets have been the past 2 years. Like if you're 11th, there's like a 7 to 10% chance you'll jump from 1 to 4, which is substantial. Considering last year it was like 2%, so a lot better lottery odds this year.
Wait a minute. Funny thing too. So you know how they won 36 games the last 2 years? They've also been expected to be 42-40 both of those years. So what are the expectations? We just got to find that out and we'll know what their record will be.
So I think like the expectation this year is 40-42. I think that's like the standard line for us. So I'd say take 2 wins away from 36 and that's
okay. Hey, all right. That's different.
Yeah.
Analytical expert right here.
Yeah.
Better draft pick.
Do you guys think there's any situation where if they trade Kemba early, they go into tanking ground and just play all the young guys?
Absolutely. That's definitely a real possibility. And if Kemba's playing well, but we're losing, I think it makes more sense to move him while his value's high. And then it's just, you know, giving minutes to Monk, Bridges, Bacon, Hernan Gomez, and whoever we get in the Kemba deal.
I just want to preface this by saying our owner is Michael Jordan.
That is true. It's a good point.
But I got to say no. And that's because we brought in this whole new front office with a whole new perspective, trying to win a completely different way. And to give up on that after 20 games, I just don't think that's something I don't think that's something this front office is going to do.
Yeah, I agree with Dylan. I don't think that's a move this team wants to take. I think Jordan's hungry to get back in the playoffs.
Great roster he has to get in the playoffs. But
luckily he's in the East, though.
Yeah. One last question before we move on to the truth. Out of the young pieces the Hornets have, who has the highest potential? Like, who has the highest ceiling on this team? Obviously, other than Kemba, who's already an all-star, out of the young guys, let's say under 25.
It's Monk. I think he can be a really good scorer in this league. You know, maybe his ideal role is just like a super six man, you know, Jason Terry, Jamal Crawford kind of type. But I'm fully confident the dude is going to get a lot of buckets in this league. He just has a great skill set, athleticism. And I think when he'll be a 20-point scorer sooner rather than later.
Yeah, how could you not be excited about a scorer like a two guard who's 6'3", who can jump out of the gym and just shoot the lights out? I mean, how could you not say that's the player with the most potential? I'm on Twitter at JacksonNBA for those listening. Shameless plug, but people ask me all the time. I'm big on Hornets Twitter. What Monk can be? Can he be like Klay Thompson? No, he's not going to be Klay Thompson. Just because, I mean, his defense is pretty bad, but I think CJ McCollum is not out of the question for Malik Monk.
I guess I don't want to agree with you guys. I'm gonna go with Malik Monk too. I think the offensive versatility that he has, given a bigger role and get him some minutes, we can actually see what he can do with the ball. I don't know. I think he has the biggest ceiling. And then I think a close second would probably be, for me, Cody Zeller.
I think, you know, you guys are right with Monk. He had a lot of hype coming out of the draft last year. I know Knicks fans were tight that they didn't end up getting him. So I think Malik Monk's a guy to definitely keep an eye on. But moving on to the truth, what emoji represents the Hornets for you?
I just went with the little guy who has his hands up. Because that's what I usually do when I'm watching Hornets games, because I just don't understand what's happening, especially in crunch time, and it's usually terrible and I'm confused. So I'll go with that guy, whatever you call that. I'm old.
I went with the tornado emoji because while it can be destructive, it's also clearing out a path at the same time. We don't know what the path is going to be, and I've got no idea to even guess what it's going to be, whether it's going to be tanking, like we mentioned earlier, or whether it's going to be 8 seed in the playoffs for the next 3 years. I've got no idea. So I went with a tornado, just, you know, destroying everything, cleared out the front office. And yeah, just bringing everything new.
You know the angry face with the like the curse, like it's blocking out what it looks to be curse words. Like it's got like the what's it called? The symbols. You guys know what I'm talking about?
If it's a new emoji, I don't have it, so.
Damn, Nick, it's dope. It's like a but like he's got like you know he's cursing because like there's a black.
Oh, I know what like, you're talking about now.
Yeah, like I'll tweet it at you guys. It's a really good one. Like I saw it the other day. I was like, damn, this is the sexiest emoji I've ever seen. So for me, it's that one because every damn year, I think this team's gonna be a playoff team, and then they fall apart and get 36 wins. So for me, it's that emoji because I tend to be too high on the Hornets.
So I guess mine may be a little bit mean, but mine's a smiley face. But instead of the smile, it's just a flat smile, the flat line, you know, straight line across just because I don't really have many emotions about the Hornets. I'm sorry, guys.
They're so plain. I know. I know.
That's just how I felt. Ice cream. But I like the one that you picked, Evan, with your hands up in the air. It's like, what are you doing? Because honestly, I don't really know what the direction is with the Hornets. Like you guys mentioned, they brought a new front office, new head coach. They want to compete for the 8th seed. But with the way the roster is constructed and the way the salaries kind of across the board, you know, it's they're really in a tough situation.
A brutal situation, especially with the cap, and that really just hamstrings the future. So I mean, I know we tried to trade MKG and Batum's impossible, but hopefully, if nothing else, we can just unload some cap this year at the deadline somehow, some way.
How did you guys feel about the fact they traded Dwight when he was on an expiring deal and then they ended up with Biombo, who has, I believe, this year and then the following season left on his deal?
Yeah, that kind of sucked. I mean, as Dylan said, I mean, we did get like a couple second round picks of the deal in Graham, so it wasn't totally useless. But then seeing Brooklyn be able to buy him out, which is something maybe we could have done, it seemed like an unnecessary step and left us with another bad contract.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't at the time, it kind of signaled we were going to tear it all down and rebuild, but that wasn't the case. So we got 4 second round picks. All right, so initially we traded Dwight Howard for Timofey Mozgov and 2 second round picks, but then we traded Timofey Mozgov for Bismack Biyombo and 2 second round picks. So essentially we got Biz and 4 second round picks. So I can't say I'm mad because we got those picks and I'm obviously a draft guy, but at the same time, losing $21 million of cap flexibility next year kind of hurts.
Yeah, I'm definitely not about losing cap space. I mean, second round picks are nice and all, but you can technically, you know, buy them. Obviously, MJ's a little bit tight with his money, but I just feel like they're not super valuable in this NBA where you can kind of buy picks if necessary. I think the cap space is a little bit more valuable to them, especially in the situation they were in. But moving on to league pass rating, where would you rank the Hornets 1 through 10?
A 5, because as they're playing, you know what you're going to get most nights. A lot of games look very similar. They're not terrible. I mean, obviously, because they're my team, but, you know, you get some Kemba moments, which are entertaining, and I think this year they'll actually be more fun than last year with the young guys, especially Monk and Bridges, but they're going to lose more than they win, and there will be some brutal moments in crunch time, so I'll put them around average 5.
I want to preface this by saying that, yes, the Hornets are, in fact, my favorite team. But at the same time, there's been almost nothing that's changed about this team over the past 2 years. Meanwhile, you've got, I mean, even bad teams that are going to be really fun to watch, like the Hawks, they're just going to shoot the lights out of the ball. And for that, I can't give the Hornets anything higher than a 2.
Oh, God.
Oh, man, you're brutal.
He's showing the love today.
It's the same thing game after game after game. It's put the ball in Kemba's hands and defend the post. That's all it is.
You know, last year I might have put it at a 2. That I agree, but I'm just hoping this year is more entertaining. But I'll give you that.
I think you should have changed your emoji to the praying hands. No.
Dylan, did you miss the memo that I'm the one who gives out the low league pass ratings on this podcast?
I did. I guess I did miss that. But I mean, I'm just really low on what the Hornets can be because I've been constantly disappointed by them over the past couple of years. So that's probably why I'm so low on them this year.
Yeah, it's fun. It's funny because I'm not the lowest person on the ratings, which hasn't been really a thing yet on these preview pods. I'm going with a 4. North Carolina is one of my possible destinations in the future if I ever get out of New York. So for me, it's a 4 just because, you know, if I was to move there, I would want to enjoy the basketball team that's going to be on TV a lot. So I have to at least scope out the Hornets.
All right.
There's some reasoning behind that pick. Mine definitely doesn't back up anything. It's just 3.5. And just because, like I said, not a ton of emotions about the Hornets. And like you guys mentioned, the roster is pretty much the same. I'm interested as can do when Brago can, you know, change the system up, but not a ton of hype for the Hornets for me. What TV show would you watch over the Hornets? Obviously, this is a hypothetical for you guys being Hornets fans. Maybe not as much in Dylan's case because he doesn't seem too happy about watching them. But what TV show would you watch over the Hornets?
I don't know. A rerun of Friends.
It's been a popular choice on the outlet.
Yeah,
I don't watch too much TV. And for that, I'm going to have to go with I mean, I just want to say that I love basketball and I love watching the Hornets, so I've got to go with a really high choice, despite my very, very low league pass rating. At the end of the day, they're still my favorite team, and I mean, I love basketball, so I got to go with The Office, which
is
the greatest show of all time, The Office.
I had a feeling. Yeah, if you follow Dylan on Twitter, you definitely knew he was going to make that choice.
Of course.
What about you, Corey?
For me, what would I watch over? All right. So the Pacific was a, HBO documentary series on, the US battle with Japan. I've watched it about
way too many times. Oh, that shit's intense.
It's intense. Yeah, for sure. Tom Hanks and Spielberg, produced. I have it on DVD. So if anybody wants it, I'll mail it to you. It's really good though, really powerful. But I mean, it's only 10 episodes, and I've seen them about 30 times. Not 30 times, exaggeration. Probably like 15 though. I like that. I like the war movie series. So I would definitely watch the Hornets over that.
I'm gonna go with Taken, the show, and it's not as good as the movie, so then I'll just leave it at that.
Wait, there's a show?
Yes.
What?
There is.
You're bullshit. If it's not Liam Neeson, what's the point?
I don't know who the actor is. It's not very good. I mean, it's not bad for passing time, but you'll check it out if you want. I mean, it's not the worst show I've ever seen, but the Hornets aren't the worst thing I've ever seen. But
does he play the same character?
It's a little bit different. I mean, I didn't watch it enough times to really explain the plot line, but it's a guy coming back from the military, and then like someone I think ends up like killing his sister, and then I don't want to ruin the show for you, but it's
it's already got canceled.
Oh, okay, there you go. So,
June 30th, we'll return for season 3.
I've got to say that I have no idea what you guys are talking about. Zero clue.
It's not The Office, Dylan.
That's okay, Dylan.
But any last thoughts you guys want to get on the Hornets?
I'm kind of excited to watch them more than Dylan. Maybe we should go catch a game sometime, bud. It'll be fun.
I want to see a periscope of the whole game. I want to see the reactions.
I mean, the Hornets, as much as I love them, they're not going to be so fun to watch this year. I'm pretty low on them, as I stated with my 30-52 prediction. They lost the greatest player of all time this offseason, Michael Carter Williams. But, I mean, at the end of the day, they're still my favorite team, and I'm going to watch more than half of their games.
For me, it's when do we start slandering Michael Jordan for being a bad owner? That's it. That's all I got.
Oh, we already have.
We're on that train.
How much do you think, you know, the problems in Charlotte is MJ's fault?
Dare I say all of them?
Oh.
I mean, not all of them, but most of them.
Majority.
From the draft to the whole mentality of the team to the whole win now spiel to Steve Clifford staying as long as he did, to Rich Cho staying as long as he did, to Frank Kaminsky over Devin Booker and possibly 4 first-round picks.
That one hurts us all. I didn't want to bring it up. I didn't want to kill you guys.
That's the killer.
So I got to say MJ is a pretty large problem.
Is it safe to say MJ would provide you more value on the court than he would as an owner?
At this, even at this age, probably, yeah.
I mean, he could be that Tony Allen type of guy right now, maybe.
He can still knock down a couple shots, I think. I saw him at a couple camps and videos last year, and he was knocking down some
threes. Still get a few buckets.
Maybe that's why MKG's never been good, because Jordan schooled him in that one-on-one, his like rookie season. He couldn't recuperate.
Confidence all gone. Evan, Dylan, Corey, tell them where they can find you on Twitter.
You can find me at my name, at Evan Dial.
Very fancy. Very fancy. I'm at Jackson NBA, but don't spell it the regular way. It's Jaxon NBA because I like it better.
Unique. Well said.
That's a good reason. Now you can find me on Twitter at KWAL Hoops. It's only one L, KWAL Hoops. And yeah, I'll be slandering Trae Young all year.
Does that stand for Kemba Walker Hoops?
Yes, it does, actually. That was exactly wow, Dylan, you get me.
I'm glad I just created this relationship right here. But you can check out OTG at OTG Basketball. Big thanks to Evan and Dylan for hopping on. Corey, as always, a pleasure. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can check us out on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio.
Peace out, knuckleheads.